It's happy seed.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Every week at this time, Lucky Strike gives you a chance to throw questions at a quartet of know-it-alls. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now add up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as always, Information Please is a completely spontaneous and unrehearsed program. And our experts this evening consist of that doughty duo, the sports expert John Kieran and the New York Post conning tower man, Franklin P. Adams, together with two charming guests, Jan Strother, author of Mrs. Miniver. Miss Strother has been with us before, as you may remember, and Cornelia Otis Skinner, famous both as writer and actress, who has just starred on tour in Somerset Maugham's Theatre, which is scheduled to arrive in New York in October. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off, but before we really get going, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams, I would like you to give me your word of honor as gentlemen that you will not act this evening like gentlemen. That you will not be chivalrous toward either of these fair
ladies.
I
can't do that all of a sudden.
Well, now I'll get about 30 seconds to rehearse. We have to play completely fair and square. If you know anything, say so. And don't give Miss Skinner and Miss Strother any advantages which they do not possess by nature, which is plenty. The first question comes from Mrs. T.S. Gray of Dodge City, Texas. Get two out of three if you can. Answer each of these questions from famous poems by quoting the succeeding lines in which the answers are given. I'll give you the question. You give me the answer. The first question is, who has seen the wind? Miss Skinner.
Neither you nor I.
Yes, what's it from, Skinner?
I don't know.
You don't have to.
No.
That's very good.
Well, when something is something, that something is passing by, I know that.
Yes, the last part sounds a little bit like Mr. Adams in his best. It is from Christina Rossetti's poem, Who Has Seen the Wind. How many of the rest of us knew that? Did you know it, Mr. Kieran, Strother, Mr. Adams?
If I had, I wouldn't say so.
Well, I can see how you're going to act all evening, Mr. Adams. Thank you, Miss Skinner. That's very good. Now, how about the next question? What does little birdie say in her nest at peep of day? What does she say, Mr. Adams? You're stepping out of your role, Mr. Adams.
Wait until I'm a little stronger, or words to that effect.
Yes, I don't
think... And I'll fly away.
Yes, that's a rough and ready transcript, Miss Strother.
Well, that didn't scan so good, but I think it said, let me grow a little stronger.
Yes,
My wings are...
My wings are something stronger.
That's right. That's one of the answers. Let me fly, says little birdie, mother, let me fly away is another answer. And it comes from what poem, Mr. Adams?
I think it was written by Tennyson.
Yes, in an off moment. And what's the poem called?
What does little birdie say?
You never would have suspected. How about this question? Is it weakness of intellect, birdie? We've had a lot of birdies tonight. Is it weakness of intellect, birdie, I cried? Miss Skinner.
Or a rather tough worm in your little inside.
Yes, that's how the question goes on. What's the answer?
He just replied, Titwillow.
Yes. No, he didn't. He replied more than that. Mr. Adams.
Oh, Willow, Titwillow.
That's right. Oh, Willow, Titwillow, Titwillow.
Titwillow.
Yes, we're very exact in this program.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's doing very well. Thank you very much. Now, how about this one from J.A. Cope of Ithaca, New York? Get all on this. This is a question about the wives of Henry VIII. We will dwell on them for just a moment or two. Which of Henry VIII's wives was the mother of the following? Which of them was the mother of Elizabeth? Queen Elizabeth. Miss Skinner.
Anne Boleyn.
Anne Boleyn, yes. And I'm always glad to find out someone who knows how to pronounce Anne Boleyn, whom I always call Anne Boleyn. That's wrong, isn't it?
No, I think she's called that by experts, but most people know it as Anne Boleyn.
Oh, no, just by MCs. How about the mother of Mary? Which of the wives was the mother of Mary? Now we have only one hand raised, Miss Skinner.
Catherine of Aragon.
Catherine of Aragon, yes. And which of them was the mother of Edward VI? Any other hand but Miss Skinner? Miss Strother, you needn't the gala.
Skinner? Jane Seymour.
Yes, Jane Seymour. Perfect on Henry VIII's wives. Your specialty, is it?
Well, I think I should know that.
Irene Holland of Hamilton, Ontario, sends this one in. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. Now, in the homes of what fictional characters might you be visiting if you found these unusual situations, if you found the following going on? Suppose you came in the door and saw a man throwing his boots at his wife as she was praying. In whose house would you be, Mr. Curran?
In the house of Mr. Quencher, Sr.
Yes.
In, he's in The Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens.
First name of Mr. Quencher?
Jerry.
Jerry is right, yes. And he had this odd habit of throwing boots at his wife when she prayed. How about this situation? A father is introduced to his children by a professor of Greek. In whose house would that be? Father is introduced to his children by a professor of Greek. Caught you on that, have I? You haven't been to the movies lately, any of you? You've been out on tour, Miss Skinner. Miss Strother, you've been busy. Don't go to the movies?
Very often, I don't.
Have you seen
much.
Bernard Shaw's Major Barbara lately?
No.
Remember that now? Well, in Major Barbara and the other children of Andrew Undershaft are living in their father's home together, and the father is not included in the household. And when he reappears, a Greek professor who's engaged to Barbara introduces them to each other. How about, that gets us one wrong, have to get the next one right. In what home would you find the children being beaten before bedtime? Miss Skinner.
There's the old lady who lives in the shoe.
Yes, you needn't be so polite. We say woman on this program. The old woman who lived in a shoe. That's quite right. What are the lines which would...
She had so many children she didn't know what to do.
Yes.
She, wait a minute. She gave them some water without any bread.
Not
whipped
water.
Them all down the incident of the bed.
Yes. What'd you give them without any bread, Miss Strother?
Butter without any bread.
Broth. No,
broth.
Not butter. What a messy thing, Miss Strother. Butter without any bread. Broth, of course.
Broth.
Yes, thank you, Miss Adams. Whip them all soundly and put them to bed. Well, you ladies and gentlemen are doing too well this evening. Let's see what you can do with this one. From Catherine Hanley of New Orleans. Can you recite, let's say, 4 lines of poetry in which theatrical terms are mentioned? Any theatrical term at all mentioned in any way? 4 different lines of poetry. Mr. Kieran, start us off.
All the world's a stage. W. Shakespeare.
Yes. If you went on with that, by the way, what would you get?
Players.
You bet. And what other theatrical terms? Just keep going, Mr. Kieran, and you'll answer the whole question.
Parts. Acts.
Yeah. Exits, entrances?
That's right.
Yes. The,
I'm all right in that one quotation.
All right in that one quotation, as Mr. Kieran points out. Miss Strother.
If all the world were ham and eggs.
I resent that.
That's very good. Very good. That gives us 2.
I don't know how it goes. Angels and earthly creatures.
Angels and earthly creatures. There is such a line. I don't know who wrote it. Angels, certainly a theatrical term. Wouldn't you say so, Miss Skinner?
But I couldn't give 4 lines.
Oh,
no, I asked for 4 separate lines.
Oh.
Now, one more. Any theatrical term at all? Miss Strutter?
Oh, wait a minute.
Miss Skinner?
Oh, for the wings of a dove.
Wings, yes, very good. Sure, that will do. Miss Karen?
I am my father's ghost. The ghost walks.
Oh, the ghost. Yeah, that's true. Although lots of other places, too. Miss Strutter, do you have another one?
Oh, I was only going to say greenery, yallery, grove, and a gallery, put in the grave young man.
Gallery is very good.
Show me the way to go home.
Oh, we're getting good. Very good. Thank you, Miss Adams. Now, from Henry Thomas of Franklin, Pennsylvania, comes this question. Get 3 out of 4, the current events question. Each of the following took part in the recent sinking of the Bismarck. Give the correct naval classification of each. Sheffield. Sheffield was what? Mr. Kieran? I'm going to name 4.
Name the other.
All right.
Name the other.
I will. I'll. Here they are. Sheffield, the Ark Royal, the Catalina, and Zulu. Now, they differ.
The Ark Royal is an airplane carrier.
That's correct. The Ark Royal is an aircraft carrier. That's quite right.
The Catalina is a type of airplane.
That's quite right. That gives us 2. That leaves the Sheffield and the Zulu.
There's probably a cruiser and a destroyer.
Which one is which? Mr. Kieran, you'll have
first to... First is the destroyer.
The first what?
Named.
Which did I name first, Mr. Adams?
Sheffield.
The Sheffield is a destroyer.
Yes.
And the Zulu is a cruiser.
Yes.
That's wrong. I'm sorry. It's just the other way around. The Sheffield is the cruiser which made the first contact with the Bismarck during the chase, and the Zulu is one of the three destroyers of which the other two were Cossack and Maori. I'm afraid that loses us $25 and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you. Now, the next one from Mrs. J. William Taylor of Birmingham, Alabama, is a 2 out of 3 question. It's a rather simple musical question, ladies and gentlemen. The pianist is going to play 3 well-known songs. The lyrics, in each case, were written by distinguished poets. Can you name the poet responsible for the words? Let's have the first. Mr. Kieran's hand was up at once. Mr. Adams' hand, thank you. Mr. Kieran, will you start us off?
It's Sweet and Low, yes, by Tennyson.
That's quite right. You know who wrote the music?
No, I don't.
Music, which is very lovely, too, is written by someone who never gets any credit. A gentleman by the name of Barnby. B-A-R-N-B-Y. Now let's have a second. Oh, we have several hands. Mr. Brother?
Thomas Moore.
Who wrote, what's the song?
The Bay of Dublin. Last Rose of Summer.
Last Rose of Summer by Thomas Moore. That's right. And who wrote the music?
Thomas Moore.
No, he did not. I beg your pardon?
Bowles.
No, Bowles did not write it. Skinner?
It's from an opera, isn't it?
No, that's the other one. That's
oh, that's
opera.
Bohemian Girls.
Well, it's a fellow named Trad, T-R-A-D, period, Mr. Adams, otherwise known as traditional. we don't know. We don't know who wrote the music. Let's have the third and last. That's a tough one. Of the three, I think that's the toughest. I have one hand only, Mr. Kieran.
That's Stars of the Summer Night, written by, I believe, Henry W. Longfellow.
Absolutely right, Mr. Kieran. I don't think many of us would have known that. Very good. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out only $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Thanks for my cruiser.
Thanks for your cruiser. And now Mr. Cross points out that whether you know it or not, you smokers are really in the driver's seat at tobacco auctions.
That's right, Mr. Fadiman. The tobacco buyers at those auctions are there to buy tobacco to suit you smokers. Because you want a milder, lighter smoke today, the lighter, milder tobaccos are bid up and up so that they cost more. That's why it's important for you to know that at market after market, the American Tobacco Company pays higher prices to get the finer, lighter, naturally milder leaf. For example, at Richmond, Kentucky last season, American paid 27% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 27% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. So next time you step up to that cigarette counter, remember we pay the price to get the kind of tobacco you like best. Mr. Fadiman, isn't that what's called tailoring to taste?
Yes, Mr. Cross, and for your part, you tailored the time nicely. Just 53 seconds. We'll go on with the second half of the program with a question coming from Mrs. Milton Gottlieb of Savannah, Georgia. Get 2 out of 3 if you can on this one. This is about famous literary ladies. Which lady caused a change in climate? Miss Kieran?
The daughter of Ceres.
Yes. What was her name, Mr. Kieran?
Proserpina.
Very good, Mr. Adams.
Proserpina.
Yes, either one. And what's the story, Mr. Kieran?
She was captured by Pluto and carried down into the ground, and her mother asked for her rescue from Jupiter, and she was permitted to come up in the spring, and then she goes back underground with her husband in the fall, and that's winter.
That's right, in the fall and winter. That gives 6 months to either party, which is fair enough. Better than most husbands make out. Mm-hmm. The next question is this. What lady in literature brought about a naval program? Miss Skinner?
Wouldn't you say Helen of Troy?
Yes, I would, because it's on the card. That's right. and how would you prove your answer?
She brought about the sailing of the Greek fleet to rescue her, bring her back from Troy. And also,
yes, and what's the famous line that tells
you? She launched a thousand ships.
That's right, thank you. Who wrote
some ships?
Who wrote the line?
Marlowe.
Marlowe, that's quite right. Oh, yes. One of Marlowe's mighty lines, Mr. Adams. How about this one?
Helen, my beauty.
What lady caused an entire college student body to commit suicide? Miss Skinner.
Isn't that Zuleika Dobson?
Yes, it is Zuleika Dobson. And who wrote the...
Max Beerbohm.
Do you remember how the situation occurred?
No, I just remember the mass suicide.
Well, I think they drowned themselves, didn't they, Miss Strother? Do you remember?
I don't know.
I think they all stepped into a lake.
They marched into the...
Why did they do so? Why did she drive them to suicide?
I don't know.
Just turned their heads. She was so beautiful, apparently. That gives us 3 out of 3 on this. And the next one from Mrs. Charles E. Cole of Dardanelle, Arkansas, is a question on which I shall ask you to get all correct. What is the difference in the following? Bouillon, consommé, and broth. Bouillon, consommé, and broth. Very simple question. Repulsively simple. Miss Strother, Miss Skinner, do either of you ever step into the kitchen?
No, not very often.
No, neither of you care.
I don't think there's any difference.
Oh, yes, there is. It's just that you're eating in restaurants. Miss Strother?
Broth has all the bits left in it. Consommé is clear, and bouillon is what Sir James Barry called one of the darling little fillies that is not quite sure which it is.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. I'm not sure what you mean by your definition of bouillon, but you're right about the other. Consommé is a clear soup. What's it generally made from, Miss Strother?
Consommé?
Yes.
Can be beef or chicken?
Chicken generally, or veal sometimes, can be made from beef. And what's broth made from? What's in it, Mr. Skinner?
Lamb, isn't it, isn't it?
Well, I suppose you can use almost any kind of, you can have beef broth, lamb broth.
Lamb broth is made out of lamb.
Yeah.
Very funny that way.
Miss Adams really knows this. But what has been boiled along with the meat in broth, Mr. Kieran?
Barley,
rice, other vegetables. And how about bouillon? I don't think we have a very clear idea of bouillon. Mr. Adams, could you step into the breach?
Well, it's made from cubes in our house.
you have a quickly run house. Well, it's clarified and seasoned stock, as I learned. Served as a soup and made from beef, unless it's otherwise stated as such as clam or tomato bouillon. Well, I think that's good enough, Miss Strother and other ladies and gentlemen. How about this one?
I'm hungry.
How about J.M. Gowan's question? This comes from this city. Get 3 out of 4. Now, we all listened last Tuesday night to the president's speech. In the course of that speech, he quoted, whether he knew it or not, from a number of people. He quoted from H.G. Wells, from Israel Putnam, from Rudyard Kipling, and finally, from himself. Can you give me in substance 3 of those 4 quotations? Miss Strother.
He quoted Wells, "The Shape of Things to Come."
That's quite right, yes. Where in Wells do you find that phrase?
Well, it's the name of a movie.
Yes, and the name of a book. Yes, called "The Shape of Things to Come." Remember the whole sentence in which the president used the phrase? We do not accept and will not accept.
Hitler's.
Yes, this Nazi shape of things to come. Yes, very effectively used quotation. Now, how about the quotation from Israel Putnam? Mr. Kieran.
Well, that's the one about not firing until you see the whites of their eyes.
Exactly right, Mr. Kieran. And he did use that. Remember, when your enemy comes at you in a tank or a bombing plane, if you hold your fire until you see the whites of his eyes, you will never know what hit you. Israel Putnam is credited with that, and also another revolutionary.
General Warren, I believe.
I think it's Colonel Prescott, Mr. Kieran, though I may be wrong.
Dispute all around about it.
Yes, and we're not going to settle it tonight. Now, how about the quotation from Rudyard Kipling? Very famous one. I know that Mr. Kieran knows the quotation. Miss Strother?
Did he say east is east and west is west and this time the two are going to meet?
Kipling said that and then the thing dropped. Mr. Roosevelt didn't say that.
Wasn't it something from the recessional?
Yes, it was. Go right ahead, Miss Skinner.
The far-flung battle?
That's right, Miss Skinner, yes. Britain still fights gallantly, said Mr. Roosevelt, on a far-flung battle line. And that's, Mr. Kieran, you remember the lines? And what are they? From Rudyard Kipling.
One of our far-flung battle line, beneath whose awful hand we hold dominion over palm and pine.
Yes, and I'm sure you could go on with the entire poem, Mr. Kieran, if I didn't stop you. That's very good. Thank you. And now, finally, the quotation from the president himself. He quoted himself. One of his best-known sentences. Oh, I think we should all remember that. None of you remember that?
Toward the end?
No, I think it was toward the middle. The only thing we have to fear...
is fear.
Itself. Thank you, Mr. Adams. That's right. Well, that gives us 3 out of 4, which was all we were required to get, and sends us on to a question from Edward Liebel of Brooklyn. Again, get 3 out of 4. Name the servant of each of these Shakespearean characters. And the first is Olivia. Olivia's servant. Mr. Kieran?
Malvolio.
Yes. In what play do you find it?
Twelfth Night.
Yes. There was another servant to Olivia also. Miss Skinner?
Well, she had two others, Toby Belch and Andrew Eglutie, weren't they?
Well, I don't think that
Mariah?
Andrew Eglutie did very much work.
Mariah?
Mariah, yes, the sharp-tongued Mariah. How about the servant of Antipholus? Mr. Kieran.
Dromio.
Dromio. In what play will you find it?
The Boys from Syracuse.
Well, that's the modern.
Comedy of Errors.
Yes, that's the more profitable version. The Comedy of Errors. Shylock. Servant to Shylock named, we have one hand. Mr. Kieran?
Lancelot Gobbo.
Lancelot Gobbo. Yes, in Merchant of Venice. And finally, servant to Desdemona. Miss Skinner?
Amelia.
Amelia, yes, in Othello. Well, that gives us 4 out of 4. The Shakespearean scholars are doing very well this evening. How about this one? Shall we shift to art? Get all on this if you can. Grant Morton of Richmond, Virginia, sends this one in. Name a famous painter who lived during the 17th century and who frequently painted subjects who were, in the following cases, fat, thin, and short. Who painted fat subjects? Miss Strother.
Rubens.
Painted fat subjects. And why did he do so?
He liked them that way.
That's all. He just liked them that way. Yes. And who painted thin subjects? We have two hands. Mr. Kieran.
I'd say El Greco.
El Greco. Any particular reason for his liking thin?
No,
subjects?
That's his style of painting.
That's true, Miss Strother.
It's sometimes said that he had some defect in his eyesight which made him see everybody very thin.
Yes, distorted. And there's another reason, perhaps. He tended to very melodramatic paintings, people in agonized positions. And fat people in agonized positions aren't as effective as thin people in agonized positions. How about a famous painter who painted subjects who were short? Miss Skinner.
Velázquez.
Yes, when...
He painted dwarves.
Dwarves and children,
and
too.
Children, yes.
I suppose others painted children, but he was particularly famous for his dwarves. That's quite right. You ladies and gentlemen are much too bright for me this evening. How about this one from Alice Connors in Minneapolis? Get 3 out of 4. Here's a question about twins. Who were these twins, whether real or fictional? The first pair is Daisy and Demi. Daisy and Demi. They're out of, they're from a writer that all of us know.
Did you say Demi or Demi?
No, Demi. D-E-M-I. Last name Tuss. Demi Tuss. do you remember Daisy and Demi? They're the children of Brooke in Little Men. Louisa May Alcott's Little Men. I think they appear in Little Men, too.
Yet.
It'll wait for you, Mr. Adams. Here's another set of twins. Brother Charles and Brother Ned. Brother Charles and Brother Ned. To be found where? Oh, we finally got a question that stumps this renowned panel. They're the...
School book?
I beg pardon?
Is that a juvenile book?
No, though you may have read it as a bright child, Mr. Adams.
Are they from Dickens?
Yes,
the Cheerable Brothers?
Very good, Miss Skinner. That's very good. The Cheerable Brothers and Dickens, Nicholas Nickleby. That's extremely good. How about Judith and Hamnet? Judith and Hamnet. A well-known set of twins? Pair of twins? Either a fact or fiction? Well, they are the son and daughter of William Shakespeare. Do you remember? Shakespeare, in between plays, was responsible for a son and a daughter. And saved time by having twins, or helping his wife to have twins. Judith and Hamnet. I don't know whatever happened to them. Do you know, Mr. Kieran?
No, I don't.
Never heard of them since.
They got into a dispute over property in his will.
And since then, have never been heard of. Neither have I.
I think they sued the estate for non-support.
Very possible. Now, how about the set of twins known as Chang and Eng? C-A-N-G and E-A-N-E-N-G. Chang and Eng. Mr. Kieran.
Siamese twins.
The original Siamese twins, yes. I think that gives us 2 wrong out of 4, sending $25. Courtesy of Lucky Strike and a set of the Britannica to Miss Alice Connors. And sending us on to the next question. Get 2 out of 3 if you can on this one. For Mrs. Margaret Hookel of Des Moines. What cook or baker in literature did the following things? Which one wrapped his pastry in sonnets? Wrapped his pastry in sonnets. Miss Adams?
That would be Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yes, right on the nose. And what was the name of the cook or baker? Remember, Miss Kieran?
Ragueneau.
Ragueneau, yes. Ragueneau and Cyrano de Bergerac. Thank you, gentlemen. Now, which cook or baker used butterflies as the main ingredient for his pièce de résistance? Used butterflies. That's a tough one. I know you all know it. You'll be surprised when I tell you. Mr. Adams, are you going to guess at it?
No.
No? Or Mr. Kieran?
Well, is that Midsummer Night's Dream?
No, I don't think so. It's the aged, aged man in the ballad sung by the knight in Through the Looking Glass, who said, He said, I look for butterflies that sleep among the wheat. I make them into mutton pies and sell them in the street. Remember now? You don't have.
No.
That's one wrong. Which cook or baker used a pie for a bird cage? Mr. Adams.
The cook that cooked 4 and 20 blackbirds
yes,
and things.
That's quite right. Now, how about this one from J.C. Adams and Adamson? Can you identify the play or moving picture in which one of the principal characters was a man 100 years old? A man 100 years old, Miss Struther?
Rip Van Winkle?
No, he wasn't as old as that. You're the only one that might be expected to remember that, Miss Skinner.
Well, my father was in a play called 100 Years Old.
Yes, and the man who that he played was 100 years old, too. A play by the Spanish Quintero brothers. A woman 101 years old. Where would you find such a one? You'll find the character in Mesa de la Roche's play White Oaks. The part was played by Ethel Barrymore. That gives us two wrong. How about a man 249 years old? Well, it's in Lost Horizon by James Hilton. Lived from 1681 to 1930, apparently. That gives us three wrong out of three, sending $25 to Miss Adams, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and a set of the Britannica. And now Mr. Cross wants to indulge in a sort of mass experiment.
It's really a very easy experiment, Mr. Fadiman. I simply want all you cigarette smokers listening to reach down in your pockets or pocketbooks and pull out a package of your cigarettes. All right. Now, I just want to ask you these questions. Is that cigarette giving you all the smoking enjoyment you want? Does it always please your taste? Is it thoroughly mild? If you can't honestly answer yes, 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 well, it's high time you tried Lucky's. For you may be really missing something. Remember, the American Tobacco Company pays the price to get the finer, lighter, naturally milder tobaccos. For example, 18% more than the average market price last season at Lexington, Kentucky. 32% more at Lawrenceville, Virginia. And so on at market after market. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. Surely it's worth your while to discover a milder, better-tasting cigarette. So why not try Lucky's? Make the very next package of cigarettes you buy Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has paid out $75 and 3 sets of the encyclopedia, and the ladies have won by a score of 20 to 17 over the gentlemen. Thank you, Miss Skinner, and thank you, Miss Strother, for coming to our party tonight. Next week, the Levant, Kieran, Adams trio will...
Thank you, gentlemen, for being gentlemen.
Yes, of course. That's the only reason. That old trio will be back at the bat next week, and our guest will be Sally Benson, whose most recent book is Junior Myth. Now, remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. If the question stumps us, you get $25 more, and in addition, the complete set of the encyclopedia. Send your letters to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, the famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, ladies and gentlemen, is just another way of saying that if you haven't tried a Lucky lately, you don't know what you're missing. By the way, if you're going visiting this weekend, we suggest you bring your host or hostess a carton of Lucky's. It's sure to make a hit. Remember, with independent tobacco experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.